What happens is that when you aggregate judgments, when you put everybody's judgment together, the errors people make essentially kind of fall away. And what you're left with is the information. The key, though, is that this works only under certain circumstances. So let me talk some about what those are. I think there are fundamentally three things you really need for the crowd to be intelligent. The first one is that you need some form of aggregating people's judgments, okay? So what I'm talking about when I talk about the wisdom of crowds is not simply a suggestion box, right? It's not just the idea you get people to offer up a bunch of different ideas and you have someone at the top to filter through them and pick the ones that they find most congenial. I actually am talking about genuine bottom-up decision-making, where everyone in the crowd is essentially able to register his or her opinion about the problem that's being solved. Now, aggregation can take place in a lot of different ways. So it takes place in the stock market. That's what a stock price represents. It's what Galton did when he took the average of all the group's guesses with the ox weighing example. At the racetrack, it's what happens when the sort of parimutuel machine produces the odds. In Wikipedia, I would argue it sort of is the rough consensus that the group of readers reaches when it sort of decides not to change an entry in Wikipedia. So there are many different ways you can do this. And the mechanisms you use, I don't think, are actually that important. I think what is important is that you end up with something that represents the true collective judgment of the group as a whole. Okay, so that's the first one, and that's a relatively simple one, although it's one that a lot of people fall down on when they are actually trying to put things together. The two most important characteristics of wise groups are diversity and independence. Okay, so let me talk a little bit about both of those. Diversity. You know, we hear a lot about diversity and about the virtues of diversity, but the case for diversity is oftentimes made simply from a sort of touchy-feely kind of human, if you're in an organization, a sort of human resources perspective. I think there actually is a very hard-nosed and very real case, concrete case, for why diversity is important. And that is that diverse crowds are far more likely to be intelligent than ones that are not diverse. And when I talk about diversity, what I really mean is cognitive diversity. So I'm talking about diversity of perspectives and heuristics. So what are the sort of ways of framing problems that different people bring to a problem? What are the different tools people use when trying to solve that problem? That's what you want, that kind of cognitive diversity. And diversity is important in two different ways. It's important in the sense that it simply expands the range of information that we have access to. And it's also important because it allows groups to avoid the hurdles or the obstacles that they often run into when they try to make good decisions. So the first one, there's a political scientist at the University of Michigan named Scott Page, who has done a series of experiments trying to demonstrate why diversity matters. Now, Page, like a lot of political scientists, works with computer agents because it allows him to control the working with them allows him to sort of control the variables that he is measuring. So what he does with this one particular experiment is he basically asks these computer agents to solve a complicated mathematical problem. And he has them solve the problem individually. And when he's done, he can rank them from highest to lowest. So you have some that are very, very smart, some that are pretty good, and then some that are mediocre. None of the agents are actually dolts, as it happens. They all are at least pretty good at solving the problem. Then he has them solve the problem collectively. And he does so by putting them into two different kinds of groups. So one of the groups is made up of the best of the best, the sort of cream of the crop. And the second group is made up of a kind of random collection. So it draws from the full spectrum of the decision makers. Now, the best of the best group does do well. But what is striking is that it is consistently outperformed by the random group. Now, the random group's average intelligence, its sort of average IQ, is actually lower, but its collective intelligence is actually greater. And the reason Page can actually show why this happens is that although the people at the sort of end of the spectrum, the lower end, the ones who are less intelligent, although they know less, what they know is actually different. So they're actually using different tools, different perspectives, different heuristics to try to solve these problems. That's not necessarily good for them as individuals because they actually don't do as well. But what it means is that when they're included in the group simply has a much wider range of potential solutions to draw on. And so that diversity in and of itself actually makes the group smarter. James March, another political scientist, shows the exact same phenomenon, explaining why it's good in any group to constantly bring new blood in. Because you bring somebody new in, they don't know as much, they have less experience, etc. But again, the key is that what those people know is likely to be different. And that in and of itself can make the group smarter. Now, you can actually see this phenomenon in a wide variety of examples. I'll just give you one. There's a study of investment clubs. I don't know if you all remember, but in the late 1990s, there were a lot of investment clubs. People would get together and try to pick stocks together collectively. After the bubble burst, there really are not very many investment clubs left in America. But what they did was they looked at 11,000 investment clubs, and they divided them into three different groups. One was made up of all men, those that were made up of all men, those that were made up of all women, and those that were made up of both men and women. And again, pretty much across the board, the groups that were made up of men and women outperformed either of the single-sex groups. And the reason seems simply to be that expanding the range of solutions allowed them to make better decisions about what stocks to buy. The third thing we really need, and this is especially relevant, I think, when it comes to the internet, is what I call independence. By independence, all I mean is that you want people to be making judgments based fundamentally on their own knowledge, their own information, their own intuitions, rather than spending a lot of time looking at what those around them are doing or trying to piggyback on the knowledge of others. You know, I think when you hear the concept of the wisdom of crowds, at least at first glance, although probably less so if you spend a lot of time on the net, but I think when you first hear it, it's an idea that seems sort of counterintuitive at best and completely crazy at worst, basically. And I think especially if you spend a lot of time in organizations, you can feel that way. Because I think our experience of groups usually comes in one of two varieties. One is that groups are extreme. They are volatile. They do things that no one person in the group would really do on their own. So that's sort of the stock market bubble of the late 1990s. It's riots. It's lynch mobs. You know, this is sort of the madness of crowds, as it's been familiarly called. The other image we have of groups is that groups are really watered down, that group decisions tend to be mediocrity, tend to offer mediocrity at best, and can never really truly be intelligent. Now, I think both of these images of groups obviously have a real foundation in reality. Groups sometimes are incredibly extreme, and groups sometimes are mediocre. I think anyone who's been in meetings has sometimes come out of a meeting and said, we are all now dumber than we were when we went into that meeting. And you know, instead of rising to the level of the best member and above, which is what I'm actually saying crowds can do, we've often had the experience of a team falling to the level of its dumbest member or below, basically. And I think those things are real. But I think one of the fundamental reasons why they happen is that we often put too much of a premium on consensus. So that is to say, instead of sort of aggregating the individual judgments of many different people, we try to find the solution that everyone can at the very least feel comfortable with or sort of sign off on. And that's really when you end up with that really watered down decision. Because instead of really tapping into the intelligence of the individuals in that group, you're really just doing something very different, which is just sort of trying to find their lowest common denominator in almost a literal sense. So what the paradox of the wisdom of crowds, at least in my mind, is that actually groups are smartest when everyone in them is actually acting as much like an individual as possible. So you really want people to be thinking for themselves and then tap into the aggregate of all of those individual judgments. That's how you get to it. And so independence is really fundamental in this regard, because if people are not relying on their own individual judgments, then it's unlikely that you're going to end up with a collectively intelligent forecast. And you're also going to end up with a situation where people are biased in similar ways, where they're making similar kinds of mistakes, etc.